I'd like to get started. Welcome to the work session of the City Council meeting of September 16th, 2025. Our first item is a discussion of the action items related to the park strip improvement requirements and related issues. Sherry Pace.
Turn on the mic. Okay. So I'm just going to go through the rules really quickly because you can read these later. We'll give you copies of these slides if you want them. But in 2022, we adopted the water-efficient landscaping standards. And so I just wanted to quickly review those for you. And it regulates new construction, either residential or commercial, and then it regulates any property that has 5,000 square feet or more in changes or remodels. So it regulates what the plant selection should be for water efficient landscaping. They need to be group them together based on water needs and how much sod you can have, or you can't put them in park strips and you can't put them in areas that are 8 feet or greater. And we did this so that we could comply with the Weber Basin's program, flip the strip, and eventually then they started the new one where you flip your front yard instead of, or any sod on your property, not just your plant strip. So our standards speak about the canopy, or speak about the tree selection that you make, talk about what kind of tree you need, depending on if you want it for shading or if you need it for screening tall objects. Talks about how you can trim the trees, and it refers us back to our street tree ordinance, which was adopted back in 2019. And in our street tree ordinance, that was developed by Utah State University Extension, and they came up with a chart of trees that they recommend. They divided it into three areas in the town: the east side, the west side, and then the town center. And that's based on the soil types that we have in those areas and the trees that will perform best in those areas. Because as you know, out in the west side, we have a lot more clay soils and a higher water table. And so different trees do well in that environment. And then it's further segregated down by the size of the park strip. So we have small trees for park strips that are between 3 and 5 feet, medium trees that are for park strips between 5 and 8 feet, and then we have large trees that go in park strips that have 8 feet or greater. We have some regulations in there about the mulch that you use, how it needs to be angular or crush rock so that it can be compacted. You can't put pea gravel in your park strip because it tends to just wash out and go down the storm drain, and that's a problem. And then if you're on a slope street, your park strip is 8% slope or greater, it has to be compacted if you're going to use rock in your park strip. As far as turf design goes, we require drought tolerant. I am so tongue-tied tonight. Drought tolerant sod to be used. Obviously, I just spoke about that. It can't be in areas less than 8 feet. It can't be in park strips. It's prohibited on slopes greater than 25%. There's a requirement for one tree for every 1,000 square foot of turf you put in on your new lot. And then you're limited to putting in turf in on 25% of a residential lot with a maximum of 6,500 square feet. And you're limited to 5% of a commercial lot with a maximum of 5,000 square feet. We have specific regulations for park strip design, and this one is the one that makes the most, has the most complications or is relevant tonight. So our park strip design, you can plant vegetation. Plants in a park strip can be 22 inches high in the clear view area. Anything that's outside of the clear view area, you can have those grasses, those tall grasses that grow really nice that are about 36 inches tall. We require 33% vegetation in the park strip, and that can be, trees can count towards that. So if you plant a large tree, you get 100 square feet towards your calculation. A medium is 75 square feet, and a small tree is a 50 square feet. You can't have any vegetation that has thorns or spines or sharp, or could damage bicycle tires or get stickers in your your puppy's feet. And then you're not allowed to put gravel within 36 inches of a tree unless you have a drip irrigation system, because the gravel tends to heat up and it's not good for the tree. We do allow boulders in the park strip, but they have to be 24 inches away from the curb. And the only paving that's allowed in the park strip is for a 4-foot carriageway. So that's so to carry people from the street when they're parking on the street to your front yard or to the sidewalk. So a walkway, basically. And then retaining walls or planters are only allowed per a development agreement. And that goes into our town center, where we have the park strips like you see across the street here that have the big cement planter boxes. We don't want those in every residential park strip, but we will allow them under certain conditions and when they meet our standards and specification manuals as we've adopted them. So the second part of this action item was to look at city properties that might be eligible for Flip the Strip. And yes, the city is eligible to apply with Weber Basin. There are yearly limits. I believe it's a $50,000 per year reimbursement, and it's $2.50 a square foot for every bit of sod that you remove. So some of the properties we looked at were around City Hall, and again, these are just ideas. So we're not ranking these. These are not ranked in our priority or our choice. We just wanted to show you some of the available properties and get your priorities and get your feedback on how you would like us to proceed if you want us to do this in some of the city. So we looked at City Hall. We looked at the roundabouts on Foxborough. We looked up at Center Street in Valley View. We looked on Lacey Way. We looked at the property that we own at Orchard Drive and Sycamore Lane that used to be a road right-of-way, but it is now a private. We realigned the street, and so now it's just a leftover parcel that we own. Parkway Drive and Tunnel Springs Park. So I wanted to just show you really quick, just to give you an idea of what water-efficient park strip design looks like. So this is in front of Quick Quack on Orchard Drive. This is about 285 feet long. It's a total in the park strip of 863 square feet. So 33% of that would be 284 square feet. It has four trees. They count for 75, they're medium trees, so they each are 75 square feet, so they get 300 square feet of coverage. And there are 19 shrubs, and that they make up about 102 square feet. And we look at the shrubs, they're about an average of 8 square feet each at maturity. So these are 3 years later, after they've grown up a little bit and they've started to fill out the park strip, and this is what it looks like. And I think it looks pretty nice. I think they've done a good job in this part. So that's something that similar to what we would be looking at in some of our park strips. So the first ones we looked at was City Hall, and out here on the corner of Center and Main. And then I have inset the park strip that's along the lower parking lot on Main Street. So areas A and B, which are the circle the corner, the thought here was if we replaced the grass in the two park strips, and we wouldn't want to add trees on Main Street because the park strip's a little narrow and you're coming up to a stop sign. So we thought it would be good to put it behind the sidewalk, which also matches the rest of the park strip. If you look down at the lower parking lot, the landscaping between the sidewalk and the parking lot, we put the trees there instead of in the park strip. So I wanted to match it on that. And then I'm just showing some shrubs in those areas. So this kind of gives you an idea of what you would need to do to meet the standard for 33% vegetation in these park strip areas at City Hall. And again, we'll provide you with copies of all these slides so you can look at them in more detail. And again, not designed by a landscape architect, just a planner. We looked at the Foxborough Cutler roundabout. This area, believe it or not, is 10,000 square foot in that big circle. it's a big roundabout. It has 13 existing trees and some grass. And so this would just be replacing mulch at that location. Just to give you an idea, about 1 ton of mulch covers 60 square feet 4 inches deep. So a lot of rock would have to be purchased. We'd want to purchase that close because the trucking charges is where it really gets expensive if you don't buy them within 5 miles of your location. We looked at Foxborough and Fox Hollow roundabout, and that led us to think, well, should we, if we were going to do this one, would we want to just do the roundabout and change that out to rock from sod? And then would you want to do the park strips? Would you want to do these other couple of areas that are there? They all have existing trees, and so there wouldn't be any new plant material that needed to be planted. It would just need to be converted with the sprinklers for the drip irrigation for the trees, and then the sod removed and rock mulch put in. But you can see that this is a pretty big area. It's a really beautiful amenity that we have there, but it is sod that really isn't used for anything other than to look pretty, and it does look pretty. So it has aesthetic qualities, it has cooling qualities for the environment. So sometimes grass is good, it's just not an active play area of grass, right? In the roundabout, you wouldn't want to go play or have a picnic there. Center Street and Valley View, this is an area that we thought could use some beautification as we went through some of the areas. So there's some park strip right there on Valley View that doesn't have, has a few trees on the south side of Valley View, but there's really not much on the north side. Can't really plant trees in it, it's pretty narrow, but you could put a few shrubs in that location if you changed out the grass for rock. On the south side of Center Street, that is the entrance to some water tanks, I believe. And then it also fronts South Davis Water, secondary water holding area there. And so these are some areas that we thought it's not park strip, it's all behind the sidewalk because the sidewalk is against the curb. And so we thought we could look at these areas for possibly converting them to some rock mulch and some shrubs and adding some new trees on that street. Moving around the corner on Lacey Way, you can see that we have a really nice park strip here. We do maintain this park strip. It has trees in the park strip, but it doesn't have mulch in it. So we wouldn't need to put any additional vegetation in this park strip. We would just be replacing sod with rock. This is the property I was telling you about at Orchard Drive in Sycamore. So Sycamore Lane used to come directly south straight and intersect at an odd angle. When we realigned that street, it left this weird little piece of property that we can't vacate. It just used to be grass. We can't vacate it because we have too many utilities under it. And so we can't plant trees there, but we could plant some shrubs. We could put some rock mulch. We have talked to the neighbor of this and asked them about possibly doing an agreement where they might maintain it if we did the improvements. Last I've heard, he's not interested now in allowing us to hook up to his water. And so we told him that we would have to see what direction the city council wanted us to take with that, because he's not interested in maintaining it or allowing us to use some drip irrigation from his irrigation to plant some shrubs there. There is a small area on Parkway Drive where we access the trail there, and also there was a road cut in for when we were mitigating the landslide. And the park strip there is in pretty rough shape. We can't plant trees in this park strip because there are gas lines that are under this. This is a gas line easement. So we wouldn't be able to plant trees, but we could plant some shrubs and clean up this access to the trail. So this is a trail that comes in at the top of the ridge and then goes up Eagle Point over the landslide and up into, eventually up to Wild Rose Park.
So is that currently turf?
Right now, uh-huh. It's dirt and weeds.
Dirt, okay.
It's not improved. Oops, excuse me. And then the last one we looked at was Tunnel Springs. What are some things that we could do here? These aren't park strips per se, but we thought, where are other places where we could save water on sod. So in this particular area, there's sod in the area in the parking lot, so in those two islands and then on the back side of those parking spaces. There's trees already existing, so we wouldn't need to add any more trees, but that's a place where we could take out some sod that's not active, that's just decorative in nature. And then as we were looking at it, we thought, well, maybe we should ask the council if you wanted us to do anything else with it. And so the area that's between the road and the property line for those single family homes on the back is, it's native and it has a few trees that are planted in there, but it could look a little better, and so could the entrance as you're going down to the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. And so we thought if we were going to look at that, that might be a project that you would be interested in doing. So what we are looking for feedback from the council is the selection of the sites or priorities of sites that you would like us to take a look at, what kind of budget you would like to give us. You have an idea of what you want to spend every year on these types of improvements, because they aren't going to be cheap. We aren't going to be able to do them all at once, because they take a lot of time to do this. But we would like your feedback on what you would like us to do to move forward, because I think it would be great to have some demonstration park strips that we can show homeowners when they're coming in and asking us about flipping the strip. And we could say, this is an example of a park strip that has been flipped, the kinds of plants that are good for the park strip as far as salt tolerant and low water usage. But we want to set a good example for our residents who are going to flip their strips. Questions, comments?
I have one, Sherry. So I wanted to really understand our water situation. I think it's one of the concerns that will become bigger, larger and larger as we go forward. So I set up some meetings and went and talked to a few different water districts. I attended a few board meetings of water districts, and I will say that this actually is not as settled consensus as one might think. We see this often where everyone thinks something, in government, thinks something's a good idea, and we all plow forward, and then 15, 20 years later, we can see some damage that was done and look back and go, oops. But then, you know, we've spent millions of dollars and all plowed forward. I'm concerned. One of the things I learned as I was really trying to just study the issue, our aquifer is going down. We've had some wells go dry just even recently. As they've measured, our aquifer is going down. The aquifer that we share is recharged, of course, by rain, snowpack, and its absorption into the ground. One of the disparities I learned on consensus was if we're cementing, rocking, lining all of these areas that were grass, when it rains, when it snows, when we water, watering is, of course, the least effective, but that goes down back into our aquifer. When we line it with linings, cement, rocks, then it's running into our storm drains and it's being pushed generally out into the Great Salt Lake. And our aquifer will not get the recharge that it's been getting historically. And we already are giving our aquifer less and less recharge as we're building and cementing and doing all of these things. So besides the fact that I think a lot of these areas just within a couple years just look really bad because weeds come in, it's rocks, it's cement, and then it just looks unkempt, whereas all you have to do is mow grass and it looks beautiful and it makes for beautiful neighborhoods. I'm worried because I think we're probably going to lose our contract with South Davis Water, which is a chunk of water that we use, and I don't know what it sounds like Weber Basin is going to do, and I mean, that contract's up. I think we still have like 18 years, but it's down the road, and it's a concern because if we don't get those contracts back or they raise prices, we're gonna have some real water issues coming up. So I worry that the consensus is not out on the fact that this is the most efficient way to recharge our aquifer. It might be using less water in the front end in watering, but we might be in the back end shooting ourselves in the foot by not allowing that reabsorption that happens just with the raw earth. So,
well, with rock, it still is permeable, so the water still does pass through.
As long as they don't line it with the lining so that the weeds don't grow.
Well, they can put a weed liner, but the water still does go through the weed liner, so that doesn't go out into the storm.
And so my understanding was that it just was not as permeable and efficient as turf. But again, not a water expert.
If you're just dripping, so.
Yeah. So that's just a concern. Plus, I think it does detract from the overall look of neighborhoods and cities. Just green is, there's a lot to be said for green too, because it's creating the oxygen, it's absorbing the carbon dioxide. And so I don't know that we want to rip out all our green and put rocks that add nothing to our atmosphere and our environment. So that, I just wanted to say, I've been trying to do my due diligence in studying this, and the science isn't as settled as I think sometimes we hear that it is. So it's just a concern I have. I think our aquifer is a big concern that a lot of people just aren't aware of. So,
and I'm not the expert on the aquifer. We'd have to ask Karen if she had thoughts on that. But
I know Karen is the expert on it. But and I know you and Jake have had lots of discussions because we're sharing this concern.
I'll make two quick comments. Those are great points, and you're right about a lot of things. We have a very unusual situation here that is not applicable to any of the cities north of us or any of the people served by the water districts, and that's that we do not have secondary water for most of these locations. So we pump 100 gallons of water out of the ground to put it on landscaping. On a hot, windy day, up to 70% of the water that you spray onto grass is lost to the atmosphere. Then somewhere in the range of 15 to 20 plus percent is used by the plants. So potentially 10% of the water that we are pumping out of the aquifer hits the ground to ever go back to the aquifer for watering grass. Now, if we were in a water conservancy district, such as Weber Water, that provided us with secondary water, the water's coming in from outside the basin, and then you put it on the grass, that 10% is addition. So even if only 10% of the water ever hits the aquifer, that's new water. In our case, every gallon of water we put on sod, 90% of it is lost. So it's a negative detraction from aquifer, unlike a recharge situation, which is very standard for most water system areas. So 100% correct for what they're talking about in many locations. We just have these really unusual factors that affect us differently. Excuse me. The second thing about the amount of water that gets placed, when you place the liner underneath the rock, any of the water that goes down, the idea of growing plants, bushes, trees, etc., we get a lot of the same benefits without the massive water waste associated with the overhead sprinklers by doing the drip systems. So a lot of the thing with our water consumption and a lot of the differences that happen between watering sod and watering other vegetation is just in the delivery system. So the benefit is less about how many plants you have and what it looks like. It's more about the way that water is delivered. Anything that can be watered with a drip system is harder to maintain. There are some other issues involved. One of the best websites is called Localscapes, and they talk about how to maximize the water use and the pictures of people's yards. It's the information we push to the residents whenever we're asked or whenever we have the opportunity. The yards look similar. The Localscape yards often look a little more lush and green, but the water consumption is drastically different. So for a park strip area, it's the hardest place to keep sod alive because it's baking between the sidewalk and the road. It's getting hit with the salt from the snowplows. And so while the decision of city council of what they want to do or not do, there are more factors involved. The science for sod in a park strip is incredibly well-defined. The rest of it becomes where it gets murky. Are we watering our yards? Is that recharging the aquifer? Where does the water come from? The section in a park strip is a perfect target location because of all of the other factors involved. Sprinkler heads aren't designed to spray in small strips. The heat from the sun gets those areas so differently and so much more drastically than large front yard areas. So that's a lot of the reason that Sherry is talking about park strip areas and not overall yard landscape locations. I don't know if that's helpful.
It is. I think in this Tunnel Spring Park, that's, to me, concerning. That's pretty big area in the 10,000 square feet roundabout. That's a pretty big area. And I do appreciate that. There's kind of overall arching concept, and then there's small implementations.
And again, we're not advocating for any of these in particular. We were just trying to find out how far is it the council wants us to look at this. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, where are there opportunities? And you can't make an informed decision unless you know where those opportunities are. So we wanted to show them to you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Thank you for this. I appreciate it, and I like the idea of valuing the aquifer and the water savings potential that we have here. I do have a question. In most of the proposals that are listed here, you have rock as the ground cover instead of mulch. Is there a reason for that?
Most of the time it's because the bark washes off into the storm drain, especially in the hillside areas. We don't allow bark mulch or lava rock in park strips in the hillside areas.
I think when we think of the trade-offs and some of those that might come long-term when we remove a bunch of sod and vegetation and put rock over the ground, like you mentioned, there is kind of a heat exchange that we might lose, that I would value looking at mulch as an option, even if it is something that we have to replace periodically. And I also think mulch allows some of those bigger spaces that people might be walking, not the middle of the roundabout, but like in front of Foxborough Elementary on the side where people might be walking. I think mulch is easier to walk across than rocks. So that's something to consider. What would be helpful for me is an understanding of the cost savings of doing this project. And that would be speculation, and I know that entirely, but to look at, hey, we've got this roundabout and it's 10,000 square feet. It uses this much water every year, and we have to mow it this many times, which is this many man hours of maintenance. And so if we replace this, we're no longer mowing this, we are saving this much money per year. That would really help me decide how much is it worth it to spend money on that. In general, I would say I'm not eager to spend money on this at all unless it's a cost savings.
How far out do you want to say the cost savings is? Because there's an initial upfront cost that's considerable in a lot of these locations. So it would be helpful to us if you said, let's look at just City Hall maybe and get some hard bids from two or three contractors on doing a design like this, if that's something that you're interested, or if you wanted to tell us how you wanted to change the design, take the trees out or put more trees in or put the trees behind the sidewalk, whatever the direction you want to give us, because then we can do a real cost analysis of what it is, the upfront cost to change it out, and then what the water savings is and the maintenance savings.
I wouldn't feel like I need a hard plan from an actual landscaper. This can all be loose estimation for me of how much does it cost per year.
I think we can get them off of these really poorly done planner plans.
They're not poorly done, actually. I think they're totally sufficient for our needs here. So if we had that same list of this is the potential of where we could go, this is how much loosely this project would cost, and this is about how much it costs to maintain this landscape as is for 1 year. And then we can say, okay, so for 5 years, we're not going to do it. Here's how much it's going to cost us for 5 years. Or if it's we want to do this immediately, here's the 1 year. But I would say estimations are completely sufficient for what I would want to help make those decisions.
Great.
Another question I have just on the, if we're landscaping with shrubs and rocks and mulches, obviously then Public Works is having to go in and weed some of the freeway entrances and exits and the roundabout at by Quick Quack, that roundabout. I feel like they turn into just looking like a bunch of weeds. I'm not trying to discount if Public Works is out there every Saturday weeding. I'm really sorry. But I just think in general, it takes a lot of maintenance to keep it looking nice. In general, it feels like a lot of those areas just go into kind of disarray because it takes a lot of effort to keep it looking nice. So mowing really quick with a industrial riding mower versus weeding and picking and man hours that it would take to keep it looking nice versus third option is just kind of do it. It looks good for a few years, and then after that, it just kind of looks like crap. So I don't know whether that's factored in.
My only comment for that would be to go take a look at the sod that's along here on Main Street. It looks terrible. Sorry, John. It does.
Poor
it's
John.
It's not lush.
We appreciate everything you do, John. You're not trying to pick on you.
But sod is easy to mow. It's not necessarily easy to keep alive
pretty.
like Karen is stating, because of the salt tolerances. And that's because that's where the snow goes. So when we're plowing our streets, it goes over the curb and into that park strip. So some of these park strips don't look so great, even as grass.
Yeah, and it might be area by area. I know lots of areas the park strips are green and pretty, just like their grass.
And most of those are the homeowners ones, or the ones that are doing really well are out in Foxborough around those roundabouts. That grass out there seems to be doing very, very well.
It's because the snow doesn't stay there.
It looks good, John.
And high water. Yeah.
Maybe in that estimation, you could include estimated cost of maintenance post-project completion.
Okay.
So whatever effort it takes to maintain the weeds
is
included there as well. Like, we're not getting rid of all labor if we do this. We're anticipating this many hours a year in weeding or whatever it is.
Okay, we can do that.
And again, loose estimations are fine.
Do you have any particular sites that you would like us to look at more?
Can you put the list up on that?
And if you have other ones that are not on this list that you're interested in, we can look at those ones too.
City Hall should be first.
That was my thought as well. I think that makes sense. And if you're looking for a test trial place, that makes sense to me.
I think we can give you a good, not precise, but ballpark estimate for most of these. Enough to where, because I think my suspicion is that it's not a cost-saving exercise necessarily, and so. But I think we owe the council some analysis on that, and so I think we can do that. These are all different, and some of these areas, like the Tunnel Springs area, a part of that, we don't really do anything in there except twice a year, we knock the weeds down or we knock the grass down or whatever it is. So not every one of these is the same. So we'll get some costs and expenses back to you.
I'd like to be the contrarian here. Every night I drive home past the Utah State Capitol, and there are 100 acres of grass, and the place has tourists every night taking pictures and people. Yeah. And so I think our city hall is not the place I would want to get thrifty on. I'd rather do it other places. But
even just the park strip? Keep the sod in the main area, but the park strip.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay, we'll take a look at that and get
those. I actually like this list, the way that you have it, and I would put as a top priority City Hall, because I do think it's a showcase, especially for people who are asking, and like, these are the plants you could use. And then I would put as a next criteria, where are we removing sod? So versus adding to a natural landscape, that is a lower priority for me.
Great, thank you. Anyone else?
Thank you. Our next item, I'm going to move to the end of our agenda, because it probably will have to go.
Hey, and I'm just noting I'm here.
Thanks, Ted. So next item is report on Liberty Fest 2025. David?
All right. Chief's going to jump in when kind of fills the need here, so kind of move through quick. I got lots of pictures and kind of the same old same with some different variances, I guess, this year that I'll just try to dive into. But this is always a crazy, fun event for us. I wanted to bring this just because I think when you really kind of visualize how much, this is about 50 pages worth of maps and different time by time, as you can kind of see on this, what our team does over those weeks leading up to, and then obviously during the events. It's pretty crazy how much it takes to put on, you know, this big, huge birthday party for 20,000 plus people. So kind of hit on that. Again, it's pretty cool. Our guys do a really good job. This is my notes from a couple years ago. You see, we're just always adjusting in the plan. This is what I say to my guys every year. We build the plan, we execute the plan, and then plan on stuff going crazy. Because there's always something that happens different. There's always something little that we forget. One year it was zip ties. We forgot something to cut zip ties off something. And, you know, little things like that. And then 2 years ago we had the horrible water leak that really derailed. We had half of our team fixing water leaks while we were trying to put this on. So, but they've done a really good job. And I just, like, the big shout out goes to the guys because they've become part of the plan. And I think that's what's helped us get better at this every year. We divide into teams. Each team has captains. Each team has their own list with their own books that have even more details in it for their specific things. And I think there's just so much that goes on beforehand. This is all stuff beforehand, just preparing little things and a lot of things that you don't really think about that it takes to put on these events. Here's just some pictures of, like, our guys just setting up all the signs just for the running events, the Saturday. You know, again, there's three of those races, and they're a lot of work. So jumping into that, there's the fun fair. This was the layout for this last year. I thought the event was pretty cool. I think most of you guys were there to see it. I think it's pretty cool to see it grown. And here's just some of the layouts and some of the ways that we've run it. I mean, from the signage, you jump into, like, the way the routes, we have to set up all of these. Our guys are up, I think we were there at 3:30 this year in the morning, setting stuff up, getting things ready, you know, just to run these races. And the police do an awesome job of assisting with all of this and watching these areas. And I wanted to shout out Dallas Golden. If you guys don't know him, he's a stud at this, just helping out in general. But he's a great photographer, takes a lot of these pictures. And a lot of the pictures that I use today in this are from him. It kind of sucks because I go through my pictures and all of the pictures I have are when we're kind of on the downtime. I never take them when we're actually doing the work, it seems like. So I don't really get as many good ones. But here's some cool pictures you can see. The bounce houses, all the fun events the kids were into, the volleyball tournament. I wanted that picture of Sherry just because I don't know what she's doing. And I guess I'm going to use it probably as a meme. But the breakfast was much better this year. They did a good job with that group that brought in. A lot of good vendors there, the magician. Just a pretty cool event. And just thank you to council, to the committee members, everybody that helped show up, all the volunteers that helped out with this, because it, you know, it does take a lot of people to put these events on.
I don't know if you discussed this, but I just thought of this. Seemed like that the magician should have been a little earlier, maybe a half hour earlier or something. That lull, we lost a lot of people before he came on.
I don't have a pen. I'm like, I don't have it right down. So, yeah. We do. And I think what's probably important, I think where we've done really well as a group is we brief on this stuff and then we debrief. So everybody comes in with these folders with just tons of notes and we should move this up. We should do this. And big shout out to everybody that helped, but Julie and Kristen, who never come in here, never really seen, they do a really good job with this, and Linda as well, putting all of this on. So And then again, like the pictures of us are all after everything's kind of done, we're hanging out waiting to clean it all up. So, you know, these guys do a lot of really good work and we're up early in the morning. That's why I had to throw that picture in. Because 8, 9 o'clock, we're all ready to be done. So jumping into the Auto Fest, again, I think I threw in a few slides with some of the maps because just so much of the temporary fence, we set up hundreds of feet of temporary fence. So obviously you guys see how we barricade around the putting green and all these different things, just the generators, light towers, security fence. All of these things we just are getting up there the week in advance. We call it just getting it up the hill. And it was nice this year, I think. Chief will probably hit on it. Not having the bounce houses there was probably disappointing for some people. But it really was much better as far as flows and safety and things like that. So, again, that road closure is 2 o'clock on that day. And we used plow trucks is kind of what I want to hit on this year to kind of block those barricades. And again, the police presence was awesome. But just a couple examples from the map books. Like we, you know, everything from where all the feather flags go, where the flags go. The garbage cans, you guys probably have heard complaints. That's why I threw that picture on there. And Tammy's back there wondering what's going on. And we do, we write down in our debrief, we'll say these garbage cans were full, these garbage cans weren't. Sometimes it's crazy, we'll have garbage cans right next to each other, one's over full, the next one right next to it has nothing in it. We even double check with the restroom people, we're trying to find that specific time where there's, you know, where they're not being overused. We're just trying to find the sweet spot for all of this stuff, and we talk about it every year. Again, just some of the signage and the way that we have to do the traffic-wise. And again, police are heavily involved in this and do a great job. But I'm sure most of you guys were up there. Again, another really cool event. Lots of people. Big thanks to Alan Simonson. I like that guy. I mean, him. Worked together a lot on this and talked together on this. And he's been very awesome on this. So then jumping into Liberty Fest. This is the security fence that we all talked about, and that was the big addition. And I'll let the chief jump in whenever he wants on any of this, but this stuff I felt like worked really well. Here you can kind of see that layout when it was busy. And it did what it was supposed to do. It kept that area clear, so if we did have problems. Another big change this year was with the driving range, and we kind of, I think we're still gonna figure out how to kind of utilize that the best way possible, but it was pretty cool how it played out this year. Big West was up there, and we used the pedestrian walkway and had it set up pretty nice up there for everybody up there. So, again, just some pictures. Most of you guys were there. Just cool. The band did a great job. Hewitson's band was great. He's a phenomenal guitar player. All the Skydrivers, I like this picture. Again, Dallas took to see all the people having a good time. Chief here. We had the cop cars and the plow trucks kind of blocking those areas for safety reasons again this year, and I think that worked pretty well. Again, just more pictures of an event. It was pretty cool. And huge shout out to Dan Checkitz. I don't know how to get him back another year because I love working with him. We've worked real well together, and he does a great job from his side of things, and we'll miss him if he really decides to not help us anymore on it. So. But finally, these guys, thank you. These guys are awesome. Again, they're a part of this plan. They come up with good ideas. Again, most of us, this is a 22-hour day, and it's a long day. And I'm proud of this event. I'm super happy with how we've done with this event and how my guys have handled it. But I'm not going to lie to you. July 4th is my favorite day of the year because it's the longest amount of time till this event happens again. But these guys do awesome, and Linda really, she's behind the scenes, but she does so much for this, and I know she feels the weight of this event like I do, and I'm glad she's here tonight so I can publicly say that to her, because she's awesome with this as well. So that's all I really had. If there's any questions, I know the chief probably wants to chime in from his standpoint a little bit.
Sure.
Can we make a comment before? You bet. As one who's attended forever, the Liberty Fest, I think it does get better every time. And I was always an attender, but now being behind the scenes sometimes, just thanks for all the work for everybody that they put into it. I know that this is a family tradition that so many plan their whole summer around. And so just seeing these pictures and all the work that goes into it, just thank you so much from being a council member, but also being a citizen. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I, you know, every time it seems like you ever see the government do anything, we all get up here and pat each other on the back and say, hey, we like to think this, that, and the other thing. And I always love those press conferences where they don't tell you really what happened, but they thank everybody for doing something. But I would truly be remiss if I didn't say that the Public Works and that group is really what makes this exceptional for all of us, including the police department. My pictures aren't as rated G from this event because we usually take pictures for evidence, so I don't include a lot of pictures. But as you know, the year before I was really disturbed by what we had saw in 2024. And I think many of you were also, because we had seen a pretty serious deterioration that had occurred up to that point. The strategies that we brought to the council that you when you approved us and let us put those in place, particularly that secure passageway or pathway, was phenomenal. We luckily did not have to use it for medical purposes, and the fire department's not here tonight, but Chief Stewart did say that there was never a time that he did not feel like he could have gotten his EMTs through that area. We brought in people from Centennial Management, which is an event management group, which is much less expensive than hiring off-duty police officers, to man those places and to keep people moving through. I will tell you that we did have one of the event management people get shoved in that event. He ran into a guy that was not happy that he couldn't stay and view the event from within the passageway. And we did take a report on that. However, his friends pulled him away before the police could really get out there. We didn't staff it with police or with event management people as backups. So not even his own co-workers were able to really put a grab on that guy. We don't know who did it. And in the crowd like that, a lot of potential suspects met the description. Luckily, he was not injured. I wanted to just give you a quick rundown of some of the routine things that we ran into as public safety. There were no significant medical incidents that the fire department responded on. A little bit of just minor, I think a few Band-Aids and headache medicines were asked for, but there was nobody that was injured in any significant way. We did have a couple of minor juvenile problems where we released these kids to their parents. Some of them were for throwing the snap fireworks into the crowds. We didn't have the big firecrackers or M80s like we had the year before. But this was still a little bit disturbing, so we grabbed those kids up and released them to their parents. There was one kid that, for whatever reason, had more money than brains that he could buy those huge $9 corn dogs and throw those things at people. We did release him to his mom and dad, too, but flying corn dogs was a little bit of a police issue that we dealt with. We had a couple of little bit more serious issues. One was just a disorderly situation where a juvenile from Clearfield was down with some of his friends and just challenging people to fights and causing problems. We really couldn't, because of the magnitude of traffic getting in and out of that, we talked to his parents on the phone and issued him a juvenile court citation referral and just told him to leave the premise. It just was not practical to try to get him without parents gone for a relatively minor offense. And then, as many of you may have heard, at the very last, during the fireworks, we had a number of fights start to erupt out in front of the food trucks, but outside of the passageway area. In one of those cases, we did have a Clearfield officer who was assisting us get shoved to the ground while he was trying to move another youth to the exit on the north side. And another group of kids jumped on him and kicked him a few times. His injuries were very minor, but it was a scary situation. That's when the lights did come on, and that was just such a great decision in the heat of the moment to have those lights come on down there. I know there were people that were a little bit irked that the lighting bothered their view, but when we were able to get that lit up, the resistance to moving people out ended very quickly. There was one juvenile that was arrested for that, and that's still an active case that's going on. And then probably the most unfortunate situation that we had, and we do have this case filed with juvenile court, but it was a lewdness event where a male grabbed a female inappropriately. And that was reported to us. That took a little bit more of an investigation afterwards, but they were able to identify who it was. We haven't had a real lewdness or a sex offense occur like that in this at this event before. I think that the I don't anticipate that it's something we would have to deal with every time. I think it's just one of those things where they were behind some trees and they were in a little bit of an isolated, if there is such a place in that crowd, that this young man took inappropriate liberties with this young woman and reported it to us. We had several reports of lost children, but they were all quickly reunited with their respective groups. None of them even had to come to our command post to wait it out. We found them. That's often done with the help of the public works individuals or the CERT people that are there. And then just a small amount of lost property that was turned into us at the end of the event. And I'll be honest, I don't know if all of that got back or not. Some of it never gets it even asked for, like key fobs or things like that. So that was kind of the extent of the maybe the less glitzy side of it. We brought in officers from the Metro Gang Unit in Salt Lake City to kind of help us identify. As many of you remember, we had had some pretty concerning events happen out in the Salt Lake Valley just a couple of weeks before. They were helpful. We had individuals from Layton, Clearfield, and obviously the North Salt Lake police officers that assisted us with this. And it was done on a mutual aid. We didn't have to pay extra for those officers. Do you have any questions for me?
I just want to echo what Tammy said and thank everyone involved. It is such an amazing event. And, you know, often we're talking about what is North Salt Lake known for? What do other people think about? Well, we are known for this, and it's a positive connotation. People all over the area know that we put on literally the best, the best event on the 3rd and 2nd. A couple of thoughts that I had as I was thinking about, one, thank you for the event management and the other officers, because it really did feel this time like there was a lot more visible presence. Just everywhere I looked, I felt like I was seeing someone in either in an event vest or an officer. And so I think that helped a lot just in the perception. I was wondering whether maybe, and maybe it's not necessary, but maybe we could think about shutting the food trucks down and turning off the lights of that area like 15 minutes before we start fireworks to clear, so people just have no reason to be on that street. Because it did feel like as everyone's attention got diverted to fireworks, then that's when some of the nefarious activities on that food truck row started. And so maybe if we just kind of intentionally clear that and give people no reason to loiter and hang around that street, then maybe they will either take a seat to watch the fireworks or go home. But not encouraging just that milling. Yeah. It turned out to be just a lot of teenagers at that point. Families had, you know, they're taking their seats so they can watch the show. And so then it's just a lot of milling of teenagers. So maybe just disbursement of that road.
I think from a law enforcement standpoint, that's a great idea. I saw Linda writing down. I know that we have multiple meetings about this. I don't know what the food truck side of the equation is, but I think that's a wonderful thing to consider, Suzette, so thank you.
Yeah, but other than that, it felt very, like I said, there was a presence everywhere, and it was just such a good event all the way around. Everyone just really pulls out all the stops, as we just saw in the presentation. So thank everyone, because like, it doesn't matter whether you're the accountant or public works. Everyone just pulls together. It's so great to watch.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you again, everyone. I know it is so much work to put on this event. One thing I really appreciate about the event is that it is the days of events. They're held at different locations within the city. I think that that really matters to make the city feel like this can be for all sections. I know, speaking from where I am, The neighborhood really loves that Liberty Fest there on the Saturday, and honestly, not a ton of people from Foxborough go up to the fireworks. And so it allows multiple people from different parts of the city to really still be involved with the entire event, and I think that's fantastic. Would you say the safety concerns that you brought last year are gone? You feel like we've addressed those, or do you still maintain those concerns?
Well, I think we addressed them. I would never say they're gone, and I will not lie. I was apprehensive, and I think many of you were too. I think we all were. And I'm not going to say that everything we did mitigated it, because next year we're going to do all that and maybe even find some other ways to enhance it, and we may not have as good of an outcome. So I hate to take credit completely. I think part of it is just we overall have a great community with a very small disruptive influence, and we always have to keep our ear to the ground for that. But I think based on a lot better pre-planning, knowing what happened in 2024, and a good deal of good fortune, it continued to work out. And I would hope that that is what we're able to continue to do, because every one of you that mention what an identity this is to the city of North Salt Lake and what it means not just to our external identity, but to a lot of residents, including, I was really interested in what you said about a lot of Foxborough residents not going up to the fireworks, but out at the opening of the trail, at the wetlands, a couple of residents I was talking to, and they love to get together down in their yards and watch it from a distance. So I think you don't actually have to be up there to take value as a community member in this event. I hope we are able to continue to have this level of success. And again, like I committed last time, and I know David's side of this department or this city will do this also, we will continue to do everything we can to make sure that it's that kind of an event.
Yeah, thank you. And I know that you are, and I feel confident in that. David, I think you mentioned an estimation. Would you say about 20%, or excuse me, 20,000 people is what you estimate attend?
I shouldn't be estimating at all. I have no idea, really. I think that's what we've kind of always said, 20 to 30. It's so hard to gauge.
It's huge. I know that. Okay, and I say that because...
I know there's cars parked as far as you can drive a golf cart's battery in almost every direction.
Yeah.
I think even... I know they go down about as far as your house, Mayor, and I know on Eagle Ridge Drive they go down that far. And I don't know if they come clear down to the park, Lisa. Do they park that far down the hill?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and you figure even two or three people coming per car, and, you know, you've got about 1,000 cars doing that. You're looking at some, or I mean, about 5,000 cars doing that. You're looking at some significant numbers, so.
Yeah, and I think that is impressive. I agree. I think it's something that the city builds a reputation about. I think in light of our conversation last week about events and what events we want to do in the city, and the criteria we put towards those events, I think it is also important to point those out here and just to keep them in our minds. I by no means am suggesting that we don't do this event, but I do know that at this event, I do not think the bulk of the people who attend this event are from North Salt Lake. I think it brings in people from the region, and I think that's a good thing. I don't see that as a bad thing, but I do think then we are making the decision that we want to spend city money to put on an event for people that aren't our residents, and that's okay, but that's the decision that's part of what we're making when we choose to do this event. And then, so then close to that, I would love as a city council member to be able to see a budget of the Liberty Fest, and it doesn't have to be tonight, but sometime throughout the year, more of an itemized budget of this is how much the city puts into this event, and this is how much we of the event is funded through donations, because I know that there's a huge amount of the event that is funded through donations, which I think not only is impressive to offset the cost of the event, but I also think builds relationships with businesses around us that are valuable above and beyond the donation amount that they share for the event. And then the last thing is a little bit more specific. I love the stage and performances in general. I know that the stage rental is several tens of thousands of dollars for the event. I could be off on that, but I know it's really expensive. I would love for the city to look at purchasing a portable stage. I think we have a wealth of performance talent in our city, and if we owned a stage that we could put up at the Kite Festival, that we could put up at the Halloween 3K, we could start having more art performances at all of our events. I know Hatch Park is going to have a stage as part of its completion, but that is many, many years down the road, and I would love to maybe see if we can shift that budget item for this event towards a more permanent purchase of a stage. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I speak for everyone. It's just, we're so grateful that we found a way to continue this and to keep doing it. And thank you, Chief, for your efforts, and thank you, David. Let's take a quick break, and we'll reconvene and 7 minutes.